to episode 48 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. Each week, we'll talk about different adventures and vacation options out there, some local, some more exotic. Join us as we chat about our own travels and those of our clients. Hopefully, our talks will help you dream, plan, and get out there. My name is Elizabeth, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Robin, Sandy, Lindsay, and Andy. We are also joined by a special guest, Maureen, who is here to talk to us about a country that I am guessing many of you have never considered visiting. Tonight, we hope to change your mind. Malta, officially the Republic of Malta, is located in the Mediterranean, about 50 miles south of Italy and about 176 miles east of Tunisia, give or take. It's a small island nation of about 450,000 people with a booming tourism industry that serves as primary force in the nation's economy. Yet many Americans only know of Malta from the Maltese Falcon or perhaps a Maltese cross. So tonight we're asking Maureen to share her love of the country with us. Maureen was born in Canada to Maltese parents who have since moved back to Malta. She visits as often as she can and knows a great deal about the culture, history, and natural wonders of this beautiful island. So let's get started. So Maureen, the first thing we need to ask you is, can you tell us a little bit about Malta? Because I think a lot of our listeners really are a bit clueless about the country.
Well, it's true. Not a lot of people know about Malta. And usually the first thing they say is, where is Malta? Yep. And Malta is in the exact center of the Mediterranean. It has an incredibly long and colorful history. It has stories of knights and prehistoric temples and all kinds of things that would interest people who love history and people who love nature, because there's so many beautiful beaches and areas in the island.
So it's a warm place.
Very warm in the summer, 90 degrees, 100 degrees. So the summer's a great time to go if you can handle the heat.
What about winter? Is it still pretty warm?
They don't get snow in the winter, and they do range 50 degrees, 60 degrees on on colder days. But for the most part, it's pleasant all year round.
But for European terms, that's pretty warm for winter.
For European terms, it's lovely all year round.
So, and it doesn't rain 364 days a year like it does in England, right?
No, it rains in the winter and a little bit in the fall, maybe a little bit in the spring. The summer, it does not rain at all.
So when would you suggest people go to Malta? What's the best time to visit?
I suggest the summer because you are guaranteed good weather. Because there is no rain, it's hot, it's sunny. It's a perfect time to go, especially if you're going to be out and being adventurous and exploring the island. If heat is not your thing, then maybe look at the end of spring or the beginning of fall, and you can still get out and enjoy.
So give me an idea of like the scale. I mean, can you drive all around the island in a weekend or in a day? Or
well, the island
is not just one island, Maureen, is it?
That's correct. Really? It's actually made up of five islands. Okay. Three of them are inhabited. The sister island, Gozo, is the second largest island. And Camino actually has maybe four or five people that live on the island.
Wow.
It's technically inhabited.
It's technically inhabited.
They're all characters, I bet.
But the island itself is only 17 miles by 9 miles, the island of Malta.
So one day. So you could run around it.
It's very small, but there's so much to do that even if you were there for 2 weeks, I mean, even I haven't seen everything on the island. There's
really?
So much to do.
And your last trip was 6 weeks, right?
I was there for 6 weeks.
Yeah. So explain. So, what is the geography of Malta like? Like, is it mountainous? Is it flat?
It's very hilly. Lots of farmland and lots of rocky, cliffy coastlines. The beaches are what really stands out for people. Lots of crystal clear, unspoiled waters. Just absolutely tremendous.
Well, that rocky topography, though, is sort of made Malta, you said it's right in the center of the Mediterranean.
Yes.
And it's been fought over by many different countries throughout history, hasn't it, Malta?
Yes, it has. It has
There's
been
a lot of different influences.
Lots of different influences. Phoenicians, Romans, Bonaparte himself was on the island. And then for a while it was part of the British Empire. And then in 1960s.
That's what he was probably getting at. That was
yeah, exactly. Yes.
And then in 1960s. Aren't we all?
And then in 1964, Malta got her independence. And in 2004, she became part of the European Union.
So what makes it attractive, Maureen, for Americans and why it's so popular with the British is that English is actually one of the official languages of Malta, am I correct?
Absolutely. It is very widely spoken. I would say that anyone under the age of 40 is completely fluent in English and will be able to help you go anywhere you need to go. And because
it's part of the European Union, they also use the euro. So that makes it a little bit easier.
That's right. They switched from the Maltese lira to the euro, so the money can be more easily used between all the European countries.
So how long would it take you? Say you lived in the UK and you wanted to go to Malta. Is it a plane ride? Or?
I always say to people, if you have the time, 2 weeks is ideal. Because you can do a lot of sightseeing. And at the same time, if you want to take some time off and lay on a beach or poolside, you can do that as well. If you have a week, then I would say maybe look into tour operators where they have the hop-on, hop-off buses where you can go to a lot of different places in a day and get a feel for each of the different places.
What are the top tourist attractions there?
Top tourist attractions, I would say, are mainly the big city. The city of Valletta itself has the Cathedral of St. John. It was built by the Knights, and for me personally, is the nicest building I have ever seen. It's really the finest of Baroque architecture, and there are so many churches on the island. There's actually 365 churches and chapels on the island.
Wow. One for every day of the year. For,
it's, on the island of Malta?
On Malta and Gozo.
Okay.
Yes. And I think people, too, though, they think, oh, you have to be religious to really enjoy these. And the truth is, they are so beautiful, and the architecture is so stunning that you don't need to have a religious spirit to enjoy them. Yeah.
Well, Malta actually has 3 UNESCO World Heritage Sites for a country of the size that it is. I think that's quite incredible. And Valletta, the city, which is the capital, is one of the heritage sites. But they've also got some megalithic temples. I think you touched on those as we're getting started, Maureen. And I think I've heard it said that they're some of the oldest freestanding structures in the world.
That is correct. The temples on the island of Gozo are called Gigantea. They date back to 3600 BC.
Wow, that's
they are older. They are older than Stonehenge.
Wow. Yes.
They are older than the pyramids, and right now they are saying they are the oldest structures in the world. And they are fascinating because they still don't know who these people were. They don't know why the temples are there.
Oh, my husband would say they're aliens.
they found statues and vases. The statues are of fertility goddesses, and so they think there's something to do with that. And they think that they were sun worshippers. That's what they think.
So have they found that they line up with the sun?
The stones line up with the sun during the winter and summer solstices and exactly reflects on the altar.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you said you don't have to have a religious spirit, but you could have pretty much any religious spirit, it seems. I mean, it covers all the bases.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Knights of Malta, sort of what that history is?
Sure. The Knights came to Malta in the 16th century, and they were seeking refuge and looking for a place to call home. And they came to Malta, and within a few years, the Ottoman Empire had grown so huge that they had decided to attack Malta. And that was the Knights' first real test. And they were able to divide and conquer, so to speak, between the two major fortifications for Malta. And after that, they built the city of Valletta and the cathedral and stayed there and made it their home.
So where were they from?
Originally from Rhodes.
In Greece.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that I don't hear much about Malta.
It really,
now that I'm hearing this, I'm like, why
it's
do
really
I not hear about this?
Actually, extraordinarily small,
so Elizabeth,
extraordinary place.
And there still are knights, and they are philanthropists now, where they give to the community. But the knights still are in existence.
So Elizabeth, I know you've been there. Why? What brought you there?
A cruise ship, actually.
Okay.
And I think that's actually, it's one of the main ways that people get there for especially shorter stays, right, Maureen?
Yeah. Malta has the largest seaport in Europe. And the cruise ships can actually pull right up to the island so that you don't have to tender, which is fantastic.
That is nice, yeah.
So you can go, and Malta, the cruise port is right in Valletta, so you just have to go up the hill, and there you are in Valletta.
And it really was, it was a fantastic stay. The cruise I was on went from Venice to Nice, so just basically around the boot of Italy. And so one day we're in Sicily, the next day we're in Malta. And it was, it's not very far. You said the transfer you just took was about an hour and a half, you said?
The high-speed ferry.
Yeah, it took us longer, and it was sort of torturous at the time, too. That sea is kind of rough. It was many, many years ago. But yeah, and it sort of gives you a different, it's not Italian, obviously, it's its own country, so it sort of gave us a different, it let us touch 3 countries, basically. So yeah, but it was beautiful. And when I went, I was in my early 20s. I think I was 23 and I knew nothing. I probably could not have picked it up on a map. I knew about the Maltese Falcon and I could not have picked it out on a map. So yeah, it was really great for me to experience.
Well, Wednesday is typically the big day for cruise ships. There's usually 8 or 9 big cruise ships that pull into wow. Valletta. The locals know that that's not the day to go to Valletta
yeah.
because there are tourists all through it. But it's a fantastic place to explore. Valletta itself has all kinds of museums, restaurants. There's outside cafes if you want to sit and have a cappuccino, which is one of my favorite things to do when I'm in Valletta.
I will say, when she was just there and she was posting pictures on Facebook of her coffee, oh, it was really nice. It was really nice. And I know Maureen likes her coffee, so
I love my coffee.
That's yes. not saying that lightly.
Maureen, are there any cultural things that Americans might want to be aware of before they go?
I think the biggest cultural thing to know is, at least to respect when you go into the churches, have be dressed appropriately. If not, they will give you a shawl to wear if you are wearing something strapless or something really low cut. That's something they really enjoy people coming to see it, but there is that, you know, this is still a place of worship. In the summer, which is another reason why I suggest to go, they have a 4-day feast. Each village has a patron saint. And it's pretty much a 4-day street party where they have fireworks and food. They take their statue and parade it through the entire town. And it's really something to see. And to watch the tourists watch the Maltese celebrate is really something special to
So you're saying they know how to party.
They know how to party. This 4 days is the thing that every villager looks forward to the whole year, because they want their village party to be better than the village party next door. So every year it's a one-up kind of thing. And the fireworks are fantastic. They've actually, Malta has been world champion several times. So they are also very pyro. They are very much like pyromaniacs. They love their fireworks. And they love their beer, which is, they have two Maltese beers, Chisk and Blue Lager.
So somehow she knew we would talk about beer.
Yeah, right? That's why I was to the
punch bowl. There you go.
So they have two.
Two. Chisk is a blonde beer, and Blue Lager is more of an amber, and they are both brewed locally under Farsons.
Are there any other libations, alcoholic beverages that are local to Malta, or you know, native to the island that one might want to know about if one would go around Valletta in any?
I would say it's mostly the beers. There is also yeah. a soda called Kinney, and it's a bitter soda, a citrus. And some people you either really love it or you hate it. But in the summer, I find that because it's so bitter, it actually cuts the thirst a little bit. So there's that people tend to.
Is it comparable to Beverly?
A little bit like Beverly. Yeah. A little bit,
yeah.
Yeah. And for our listeners who might not know, Beverly is like a Irish, almost
Italian.
I'm sorry, Italian. That's yeah. what I meant. It's sort of
made by Coca-Cola.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah, there's a little bit more citrus in the Kinney drink.
Yes.
And sort of, what about the cuisine that you could expect on Malta? Like,
well,
what would you expect to eat that's local if you were to visit?
The most famous local dish, actually, it's more of a side. It's called a pastizzi. And it's a phyllo pastry that's either stuffed with ricotta cheese or meat and peas. And generally they're 30 cents, 50 cents each. They're very inexpensive, but they're very yeah. delicious. So it's very common for the locals and the tourists to order a plate of them and a beer, and you come out of lunch $5 and you're good to go.
I was just thinking that sounds really good with a beer.
Yeah, yeah, it does. It's perfect with a beer. They're also pasta, of course, having the Italian influence, and pizza. I would suggest going for the pizzas with the Maltese ingredients, goat cheese, olives, all those kind of good things.
See, I would have thought you would have said seafood.
Well, seafood is very much a part of their diet.
Yeah.
And I would say definitely have the seafood, ask what's in season, because it's probably just been caught.
Mm-hmm.
And the national dish of Malta is rabbit.
Oh.
And they prepare that in a stew. My friends and I, we used to call it Drunken Bunny, because they soak it in wine all day, and then they cook it in wine. And then, so it's actually...
One of two Drunken Bunnies.
Drunken Bunny, yeah.
My daughter is never listening to this podcast.
It's a story for another day.
Because they soak the bunny in wine first, the rabbit, and then they cook it in wine. And then they do it in a stew and serve it over pasta.
With wine.
But because of the wine, it actually makes the rabbit fork tender. It's it's really wonderful.
I love this country.
Sounds fantastic. I don't know about the Drunken Bunny. I don't know.
I just call it that. The Maltese don't call it that. I call it Drunken Bunny.
So I might not ever know what I'm eating if yeah. I'm there, right?
So when I was there, the number one attraction was the Blue Grotto. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I think it is sort of one of those natural wonders. I don't know if it's officially one, but...
Not officially one. And actually, it was highlighted in The Amazing Race in their last season. It is a series of caves, and the largest cave is quite tall, and the water ranges 30, 40 feet deep, crystal blue, sandy white bottom, and you can see the bottom.
Wow.
And it is absolutely glorious. The sides of the caves are all crystallized coral, and they have boat trips that take you out there. It's 7 euros or something like that, and it is fantastic.
So you can swim in it?
You can swim in certain areas if you want to stay away from the boats. But if you really want somewhere to go for swimming, Camino, which, as I had mentioned before, with the four inhabitants, it has Blue Lagoon. And Blue Lagoon is like a large swimming pool. It's completely blue. There's shallow areas for children. And then if you have older kids who like to snorkel or dive, there's caves that you can go explore all the sea life.
Oh,
it's my favorite place on the island.
So what do the four people that live there think about? Do they try to keep
them
away? They're
farmers, actually. They're farmers, and it's two families. They're related, and I don't know what happens after that.
I'm picturing people with spears trying to keep people off their island.
No, it's
down in my yard.
Because the tour boats all go to...
Sandy, it's Europe.
There you go. The tour boats... The tour boats all go to Blue Lagoon. They either go for half day or full day.
The islands out here.
Yeah.
They're used to all the tour boats coming
there's
in.
There's no hotel out there. You go up.
No, there's no. Yeah, it's a day trip. There's half day and full day trips. And they've also included a ferry now from Malta to Camino, where you can just take the ferry over yourself.
So can you talk a little bit about that trip over to Sicily that you took? You said it was an hour and a half away. So another day trip, really.
Another day trip. We purchased the excursion from a Maltese tour operator.
But you could also purchase one from your travel agent.
Absolutely. And we got to I'm trying to think what port we landed in. It was Palazzo. We arrived there. We got picked up by the coach. We went to Terramina, which is a lovely, lovely little Italian city in Sicily. And they have an open-air theater, the ruins of that. We explored that for a little while. And then we went to Mount Etna, which was a big thing for my son, since he is a science nerd. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he'll appreciate this. And we got to go up to, well, not quite the top, but they had the gondolas that went up to Mount Etna. And it was actually smoking a little bit the day we went there, which was fantastic.
A little adventure.
Yeah.
Well, that's my son, who's 12, would be all about that, but then he'd also be very nervous about that.
That was great. Yeah. And then they let you pick up a few of the lava rocks to take home.
Oh,
you know,
that's cool.
Yeah, so it was great.
That's
was really
exactly
great.
What I got.
It was a full day, though. They pick you up at 5 in the morning, and you get home at 11. It's a full day.
Nice. So what are the resorts and stuff like? Are they like all inclusives, or are you going to get a condo and buy your own groceries? Or
there's a bit of everything. There are 5-star hotels that you can be completely pampered in, spas. And then there are ones that are more like a holiday complex, where if you want to have your own fridge and stove and do your own shopping, you can do that. The good thing is they all are air conditioned,
yeah,
because the locals do not like air conditioning. So all the tour spots...
So you're saying if you rent from Airbnb or something like that, you're probably not going to have air conditioning.
Probably not. My parents' place does not have air conditioning.
And it's like 100 degrees in the summer?
Because all the places are built with limestone, it's not as bad as you would think, because the limestone is cooling in the summer and warming in the winter, but still it is pretty warm. But so if you rent a place and book a place through your travel agent, you will have air conditioning.
Wow. So I'm picturing like... lots of open windows with curtains flowing in the breeze.
And
everybody just kind of chilling.
That's
out.
Right. And the only way you'll get a breeze, though, is if you're by the water. And the three tourist cities, Sliema, St. Paul's Bay, Bajiba, and I guess Malija, they're all on the water, so you will have a little bit of a breeze.
What about how's driving there? Is it are they on the correct side of the road?
No, it depends on who you're speaking to. I just want to say... No, they drive on the other side of the road.
That's the British influence.
There you go.
Cheers.
I would suggest that you don't drive. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of cars, a lot of cars, and they do tend to drive slightly crazy is what I would say. They have a bus system built for tourists.
So Italian crazy or Greek crazy?
Does it matter?
I would say Italian crazy.
Okay.
Italian crazy. But they have a bus system completely built in mind of tourists. You can get anywhere on that island with no problem.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if it's only like 17 by 9 miles. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't walk it all in one day, but
yes, you would.
But you still do lots of walking, and I would suggest good shoes, yeah. Drink lots of water, sunscreen. Absolutely.
You yeah. mentioned the beaches. A lot of European beaches tend to be on the rocky side. Are these sandy beaches like Americans are used to, or are they rocky?
There are both, because okay. Malta is so diverse in the coastline. You will have rock beaches. You will have sand beaches. There's a beach in Gozo that actually is a red sand beach, which is beautiful. Ooh. It's a little warm to walk on because the sand really draws the heat. But, yeah, you will find sandy beaches. The one in Melija is, I would say, the most family-friendly. You can walk out for quite a while, and you will still be, it's still very shallow for quite a long while. It's fantastic.
Do you know what makes them red? Do you know what
the red sand beach? It's something off that coast in the water that mm-hmm. makes it red.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting.
Now, when you go, you fly directly into Malta?
You have to, what do you mean by direct?
You have to go through a European, you have to go through a European city.
Right.
And you, I mean, I've been through Belgium, I've been through France, I've been through England, I've been through Italy, and then all direct flights from Malta from there.
Right. Yeah. So it just depends on the airline.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. His last time he flew through Boston. Brussels.
I did. I flew through Belgium last time. Yes.
Yeah. What would you say is the best route? Because we talked about this. You said London and...
London is my favorite route going through Heathrow. The last couple of years, the flights haven't matched up as well. And that's why I've gone through other cities. Rome, Amsterdam is another one that's really mm-hmm. popular.
Most European, major European cities have flights that direct to Malta.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's one airport that you're flying into.
One airport, yeah.
Yes.
So are any of the beaches topless?
Well, they do post signs that they do not encourage that, especially since it is a primarily Catholic country. But you will find, you'll find a lot of topless, yes. Which is fun when you have children and you have to explain to them.
So you mentioned British tourism, but who are your more popular tourists in Malta?
Germans, mm-hmm. lots of Germans, Dutch, Italians. They come over and spend months there. And actually the British do as well. And you'll find a lot of connections with the British through the history mm-hmm. and through World War II and beyond, where people do, retired folks will do 6 months in England and 6 months in Malta very wow. easily.
I wonder which six they spend in which place. Think about this a little bit. So as far as other, you mentioned the four, when is that 4-day festival that you mentioned?
Every weekend in the summer. Really, it is.
So it's not every town has it the same weekend. It's no, like you can go to any no. given
And
town.
Some weekends there are two, some weekends there are three. The Feast of St. Mary of the Assumption is in August, and there are 7 cities that party that weekend.
Oh, so that's the best
part of
yeah.
You know, I do have to say, though, like, even if you look at, like, St. Patrick's Day, I mean, Catholic holidays are the best.
Yeah.
they really go, you know, it's funny to see them partying through the streets. They have the statue, they're taking her through, the priest is there, and then there's this group of partiers who, you know, are drinking and having a really good time, and then when the statue has to go back in the church a few hours later, they all go home, have a quick nap and shower, and then they all come back in their suits, and they're all dressed up to sing the anthem of the statue back into the church. It's really something.
Wow. That's fantastic.
I love that history.
So yeah. So what are some other local things that, you know, should you go to the market? Should you go, like, what are the things that if you wanted to experience Malta as the Maltese do, where would you go?
There is a market in Valletta during the day in the morning. You have to go in the morning. And most things happen in the morning just because it gets so hot later on in the afternoon. Some shops will actually close up. The old capital city of Mdina is also one of my favorite places. It has long, narrow cobblestone roads where cars can't even go through. It's almost like the city that time forgot. Mm-hmm. And there are museums, of course, and parks. And there's a view at the very back of the city where you can see a whole panoramic view of the island that is absolutely fantastic. And people will just go and sit on the wall and look. It's so pretty.
Sounds awesome. Yeah. So when are you going back?
She just got back.
That's what my family is asking me, when are you coming back? I would love to go every year. But yeah, I don't know, maybe a year or two.
Yeah. Now that I know you were saying that your son remembers this trip very well, so he's going to be pushing. Right.
Well, he went on his first snorkeling tour. He had his 10th birthday, and his 10th birthday was Camino. We took a boat tour, and there were slides off the boat. And at one point, I have a picture of him snorkeling, and there's 400 fish completely around him, and he's having the best day ever.
Yeah, Malta was actually my grandmother's favorite place to visit in the world. She wasn't particularly well-traveled, but Malta made quite an impression on her. And she just loved it. She said the people were so friendly, welcoming, and it was just a beautiful place to visit and walk around and just take in the local sights, sounds, smells, and experiences. And I'd love to go visit someday. That's always something, someplace I've heard a lot about and always want to visit.
I think you would love it. It is. It's very much, there are modern things to do, and you can take it at your own speed. You can lay on the beach, or you can have a full day of going to the museums, but it's the walking around for me, and everything's so old. You know, we're talking 3600 BC, and we're talking, you know, before St. Paul was shipwrecked in 60 AD on the island. So everything's very, very old, and the buildings are very, very old. And it's just, it's a feeling that the time has forgotten this place.
That's awesome. Oh, yeah. Okay. Bucket list.
That's on my list. Well, and hopefully we've convinced everybody to go visit, because it does, you know, you've got history, you've got nature. I mean, you really can't, there's something definitely for everyone, which we say about so many places, but it's so true.
Absolutely.
Very much so.
Well, that is our show for this week. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode, or any episode, really. To leave comments, visit us at outlandertravel.com, then click podcast at the top of the page and find the episode you wish to comment on. Or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpodcast. Or if you don't like that, you can search for Flyaway. Or you can email us at info@outlandertravel.com. We would love to hear from you. On behalf of Andy, Lindsay, Robin, Sandy, and myself, Elizabeth, and Maureen, thank you, Maureen, for hanging out with us tonight.
Thank you, Maureen.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Yeah. And thank you all for listening. We will see you next week. Gotta fly.